Corey Mascara.
Joe Rignola or Rogan. I don't know who I'm talking to.
I don't want to get in trouble with copyright or anything like that.
Joe Rignola. Trademark.
Yeah, let's stick with that. Yeah, thanks so much for being here, man.
Thanks for having me.
This should be a lot of fun.
Is it true that I am the first guest?
You are my very first guest.
That is an honor, I do have to say.
I know it is. It should be.
Yeah.
Should be. No, the honor is all mine. We are going to talk a little bit about the book that you just wrote and published, really awesome, called Stop Missing Your Life.
Thank you. You got to read one of the first copies.
I got to read one of the first copies.
Before it was fully edited.
Yeah.
Or there was actually a lot that changed.
Yeah.
After that. But yes, you were one of the first readers.
It still actually helped me.
Yeah.
Even the unedited version. It was good.
That
was really good. It was really good. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I want to start out with, I want to give people a really good value right up front. So
yeah.
What are three simple steps that people can take to be more present, more mindful in their everyday lives?
Sure. Well, I'll give you my best three. I teach a lot of different stuff. And, you know, as you know, I do weekend retreats and long retreats and workshops. And so there's a lot of transformation that can happen there. But there are always like little 30-second things that people come back and say, like, that I really like. And I'm like, of all the things we talk, like that little thing.
Uh-huh.
So I want to give your listeners those few things.
Awesome.
Because I think they have a high return. So the first is a very simple exercise called Take Five.
Mm-hmm.
I know you know Take Five.
I do know Take Five.
I know
five.
Your kids do Take Five.
That's right.
I love Take Five because it's great for people of all ages. Doesn't take more than like 20 seconds. And it's kind of fun. So let's you and I do
let's
it
do
together.
It. Awesome. Okay.
And listeners, you can do this as well. I'll walk you through it.
Mm-hmm.
So you take out your left hand like you're holding a pizza pie. And then take out your right pointer finger, as if you were going to point to something, and place it right in the palm of your hand, right around your wrist. And now we're going to slide the pointer finger up the thumb. So sliding up the thumb, taking an inhale through the nose. So breathing in, slide back down, exhale through the mouth. Up the pointer finger, inhale. Back down. Up the middle finger. Back down, up the ring, back down, and up the pinky, back down. Cool.
That was great. So I needed that, actually. I actually really did need that.
I know. It's so silly. When I first learned it, I mean, I learned it in the context of kids, and kids are really into it because they love anything that's simple like that and tactile.
Yeah, exactly.
But then start teaching it to adults, and adults were really into it. Then start going to corporations and telling executives to, like, you know, pet their pinkies when they're stressed out, and they were super into it. So
that's not awkward at all.
No, it's like it's so far no harassment lawsuits have come out of it. People really seem to like Take Five, and I think for anyone listening. Or that just went through it, you could tell it's not going to change your life to do this simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of it is it does settle us in a little bit more. The tactile nature of it combined with the breath, syncing it with the breath, really seems to be settling for the parasympathetic nervous system. There's so many ways to accomplish what Take Five does. I mean, you could take your hands and slide them up and down your thighs five times. You could circle your earlobes with your fingers and you get the same tactile and whatever.
It's whatever's less awkward in public.
Exactly. Really what it exactly. Is. So Take Five is just a really accessible version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a clear beginning, a clear end. All right. Five fingers. If you have five fingers. And if you don't have a hand or you have one hand and not another hand, you could trace any sort
anything.
Of any part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sensational aspect of it with the breath that's important.
Draw circles on a piece of paper, maybe.
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
I can see that working.
Right? It's the beauty is in the simplicity of it, and I think it's why so many people like it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could do Take Five in the morning. You could do it before you go to bed. You could
I
do
like
it
to do
work.
It right before I eat.
Oh, cool.
That's a good one right before I eat. Because most people are eating like in their car or don't do this in your car. But yeah, but you shouldn't be eating in your car either, right, and while you're driving. But
and it's also just not great for digestion
when
you're in those high, tense moments and you're trying to consume food as well. So
this
is like a reminder to stop.
Mm-hmm.
If you're religious, faithful, spiritual, you could like say it like reconnects you, makes you a little bit more grounded, say a prayer, and then go into whatever you're going to do. And if you're at work, you don't want people to see you doing it. You just do it under the desk.
Sure,
you take
exactly.
five, do it in the shower.
Yep.
So take five is the first thing. Do it as many times as you can throughout your day, or just do it once, and you'll start to see it grounds you like 5 to 7% mm-hmm. more than you were before. But that 5 to 7%,
I wonder if that's actually
time
more.
Is big.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
I actually bet that it would be much more than 5, 7, 10%
yeah.
for people,
I
especially
think that's
just
being
starting
conservative
out.
On my yeah. part. Yep. I mean, I feel it for myself. It probably feels more like 20% in this moment. Mm-hmm. And but that's what we're working with when we're right. talking about well-being. We're working at the margins. We're
yeah, exactly.
You're not going to have this huge 80% increase.
Right.
And anything that does give you that is often fleeting
mm-hmm.
And is not a reliable intervention that we get multiple times throughout the day. The reliable things that we can notice an impact many times throughout the day, they're usually going to be playing at like the 5 to 10 percentage
right,
points
right.
of reduced stress, increased peace, mm-hmm. increased well-being.
That makes sense.
And take five is one of those things.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's
yeah.
what you want. Aim for those little steps, right?
Yes,
those little tiny
the
steps
little
that you
steps.
Can actually implement.
And those compounded over time.
Right.
Like the beauty of little steps is like when you really start to integrate them,
mm-hmm.
they do have a compounding effect.
Awesome.
And then life starts to shift. So that's the first one.
Cool.
Take five.
Love it.
The next is less tactile, less physical, and mm-hmm. more of a cognitive hack. And this is just shifting your what ifs to what is.
Mm.
So what do we mean by this? I think we've all had that experience of being caught up in the what if mind. What if this goes wrong? What if that doesn't go well? What if they don't like me? What if,
mm-hmm.
what if?
Right.
You know, insert your own story. And the what if mind can be useful. It's how we plan,
mm-hmm.
we think ahead, and we prepare. But a lot of times that what if mind just creates a neurotic downward spiral.
Sure.
We live so much of our life in the what if mind
mm-hmm.
that we're actually disconnected from what actually is right here, right
sure.
now.
Yeah.
The cool thing about dropping into what is here is that it takes you out of the story of your mind. And
mm-hmm.
the majority, if not all of our stress is coming from the story. And by story, mm-hmm. I mean it's like the narrative we're telling ourselves about this
right.
moment, what's good, what's bad, what's
mm-hmm.
right, what's wrong, yada, yada, yada. When we drop into what is, we drop out of the what if to what is. We see, all right, in this moment, what's going on? At least for us right now, like we're sitting,
mm-hmm.
feel my butt on the chair. I feel my body breathing, see the roof over my head. There's no immediate threats that I can perceive. I feel relatively well fed, just had a nice sip of cold water. So I start dropping into all of these little realities
mm-hmm.
of what is here right now. And I see that the moment is not as much of a catastrophe as my mind could make it out to be.
Sure.
And I could go into a lot of things that could go wrong over the next week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very much first world problems right now
yep.
with the book coming out
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff. But there's a lot of moving parts, a lot that I need to attend to,
mm-hmm.
and a lot that's probably going wrong even as we speak right now. And
mm-hmm.
so my mind could absolutely go there, but I
right.
can't attend to it. I can't do anything about it. And if the reality of my life in this moment, what actually is here, is actually quite okay.
Yeah.
And some people might push back and say, well, what if the reality of my life isn't okay? And I drop into, like, what is here right now? And it's like awful, and that's fair. And I'm not gonna sit here and say that the reality of our life is always gonna be peaceful.
Right.
It's not. Sometimes what our mind is telling us about the moment is accurately represented by the reality of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think more times than not, our mind has this ability to create extra suffering even in a difficult situation.
Sure.
I call that. The difference between primary pain and secondary pain. The primary pain is just the difficult experience itself.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary pain is everything we cake on top of that.
Sure.
Why me? Can't do this.
Yep.
Well, how long is this going to last? Like, no one else seems to be struggling like I am. Why did God do this to me?
Mm-hmm.
All of that creates another layer of suffering.
Right.
When we drop into what is, just being with like the difficult experience itself, like
mm-hmm.
the emotion it might be bringing up, the sensations in the body, whatever we're experiencing around us, and we step out of that secondary pain, the
mm-hmm.
the why me, that doesn't necessarily make the moment peaceful,
mm-hmm.
but it helps us not create extra suffering for
sure,
ourselves.
That makes sense.
So I think it works in the good moments and it works in the bad moments.
Yeah.
Shifting what if to what is.
Yeah, you can remove a layer of suffering from that even difficult situation.
Yes. Yeah. And I think sometimes that's just the best we can ask
for. That's all you can ask for. Yeah, right. Absolutely. I think you can even add a third layer of that, because when you become aware of how damaging stress can be, and then you like start stressing out about being stressed out.
Yes,
you
know? Exactly.
So, like, you know, like, so I forget who it was. There was a quote that said, you know, just be okay with, you know, being stressed.
Yeah.
Be okay with
not being okay.
Yeah, being okay with not being okay.
Yeah.
Like, and that's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow, that feels better.
Yeah.
To give myself permission to feel this.
There was a study that came out a year or two ago. I don't know if the study was titled this or the media around it titled this, but it was essentially saying feeling bad about feeling bad makes you feel bad.
Yeah, of course it makes sense.
I think we all know that.
It's exactly.
Like, we get into mindfulness or something, and I'm not supposed to be judgmental. And then we're like, oh, my God, I'm judging myself. It's like, why am I judging myself? And now I'm judging myself for judging myself. And it's like, you know, what was the point of this at all in the first place? Mm-hmm. And giving ourselves a little bit of permission to have our experiences goes a really long way for well-being. It's not just a nice idea.
Because you're going to have that experience regardless. So
yeah.
So might as well just accept it.
It's like fighting gravity. I mean, you get out of bed and be pissed off that you're being pulled down to the earth. And like, I wish I could float and not have this force pulling me to this ground. I hate the ground. It's like, okay. I mean, you could yell as much as you want around it, but eventually one day you're going to have to learn how to work with it and walk with it.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of our human experience, too. These things don't go away. We can mitigate them and help soften them. But the great irony in all of it is that usually the things that we don't want to be here, they stop impacting us in a negative way as soon as we stop trying to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's like probably the sentiment that we're pointing to more than anything.
Yeah. It's not, you know, I think people have a hard time hearing, well, how can I just accept how things are? My life is awful. You know, so-and-so is sick and I don't feel well. And I have this disease. We a lot of our community is dealing with some chronic disease and, you know, and fatigue and things like that. And so like, how am I supposed to just accept this?
Yeah.
This moment.
Yeah. I mean, my invitation for anyone in that situation is to just look at, have an honest conversation with yourself about what is the alternative. I don't mean that as like a loaded question.
Yeah.
It's like a true inquiry to have with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you might say, well, the alternative is like, I'm not going to accept this. I'm going to fight. I'm going to push.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try to find a solution.
Yeah.
And to that I say that might be great.
Yeah.
That might be the thing that's required in that moment. And maybe like an acceptance of the situation might get in the way of the fuel required to find some sort of solution.
For sure.
And I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, that's slightly different than what I think we're talking about. When I talk about acceptance and allowing the moment to be as it is, I'm less talking about the external world, the circumstances around us, and more talking about our internal experience.
Right.
So your internal experience might very well be like, I'm not willing to accept the external reality of my life,
right,
or of this person's life, or this person's health, or my health. Like, I'm going to find something to work with this.
Sure.
So to not honor that right now, you're like disallowing this other part of yourself that's real. And I think we can make space for that just as much, that energy that wants to change external situations.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that's gotten done or any productive movement or shift in society has happened because there's been a refusal for things to be the way that they are.
Right.
So this is not just passively resigning and rolling over and just saying, well, the moment's going to be like this, so let's just let it continue.
It's it's the difference between you're not being complacent and just, you know, and just sitting by and allowing the moment to be what it is. It's like, it's saying, what can I do to change this moment and take those simple steps to, you know, sometimes those actions that are going to move you towards where you want to go. But you still need to accept where you are right now.
Yes. And that's where this is just some of the most difficult work in the world. Because we are holding, I notice this a lot in my own life in different areas of like things that I could work to change.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, trying to just be okay with them as they are.
Yeah.
It's a delicate balance.
It is,
and I
yeah.
and I haven't heard of any teacher that like has the prescription for how to navigate that. I
sure.
think that's just what we do is get better at making space for the complexity of being human
mm-hmm.
and honor as best we can what the energy of the moment feels like. And there may come a time on anyone's journey where they go, you know, right now I want to put a lot of effort and energy to try and change this circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And another time it might be actually I've fought that fight and I kind of just want to be with this as it is and learn to settle into this as it is.
Right.
Only you, any person can make that decision for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But part of giving yourself permission to be human is giving yourself the permission to actually listen
mm-hmm.
to what is the inspiration in this moment? What do I feel drawn to yeah. explore right now?
And that requires being present in this moment to figure
yes.
that out.
Yes. And yeah. so we're often so caught up in our conditioning, our knee-jerk reactions, we need to change this, need mm-hmm. to get rid of this, that we don't give ourselves the space to have that inquiry of like,
yeah.
what is my
yeah.
heart actually asking for?
Really yeah. interesting.
Yeah. yeah.
Cool.
So,
okay.
So that's what if to what is, right? Mm-hmm. We went a little deeper.
That's good.
And then another one is more just on the interpersonal level is just listening to understand rather than listen to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So often when we're in communication with other people, we all like to hear ourselves talk and we all like to have a conversation oriented around us, even if we mm-hmm. don't think we do. It just, you know, it takes anyone like to hear to understand the truth of this, just like anyone that's ever asked you about yourself. And then you get to start talking about yourself or something mm-hmm. you're interested in. Like there's something we really like about that.
Sure.
It feels good. So a lot of times in conversation that can creep up in our own subconscious where we're trying to lead the conversation in a particular way or mm-hmm. we're listening to what someone's saying so that we can already respond to it or bring it back to something that's interesting to us. And a very quick hack you could do to bring presence into communication is just make that intention to listen, mm-hmm. to truly understand what this person is saying and then allow the response to come out from there mm. organically.
Right.
And it's pretty cool what happens when you do that. It's not like you forget to say something or you just become a zombie. Like you then start asking better questions and
right.
you might ask clarifying questions like, or you might even say things like, you know, I really want to hear what you're saying, but my mind drifted off for like the last 10 seconds because I got this other thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat that? And instead of people saying like, wow, I can't believe you weren't listening to me. There's often an appreciation for that kind of honesty.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
So just listening to understand rather than listen to respond,
mm-hmm.
that goes a very long way for interpersonal communication. And that might be the most important application of
sure.
mindfulness and presence in our world right now.
Yeah, because it deepens connection between people. And I think when we in our serious human longevity project, you know, one of the biggest factors was that connection, you know.
Wow.
And so it's like a deep connection with people. And that's what allowed some of these people to live such long, healthy lives is because they had very deep connections with people.
Wow.
And I think it's because they were present and actually listening and understanding and, you know, and had empathy and compassion for each other.
Oh, beautiful.
It was a big deal. You know,
wow.
People That's always great. Ask about, you know, well, how do they eat? You know, what kind of exercise did they do? It's like, well, their eating habits were really basic.
Yeah.
What was more important is the connections and the relationships that they had.
That's very
yeah.
cool. I love
yeah.
hearing stuff like that.
Yeah, so it was really cool.
Wow.
So I love these are great steps. And again, simple. People can implement these things right away. And
yes,
absolutely. But it's a practice.
Right, yeah. Take five.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the reasons I like introducing these is because, of course, they're a practice, but they're just so easy. You could do take mm-hmm. five right now for the rest of your life and teach it to everyone you ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require deep training.
Right.
And it's just so easy to implement. Same with what if to what is. Just
mm-hmm.
With the what if mind, drop into what is here right now. And then listen to understand rather than listen to respond. You don't need to have a half hour a day meditation practice to start doing that.
Yeah.
Just the next conversation you have, bring that intention into it. And I guarantee you'll notice an impact. You'll notice
mm-hmm.
a shift.
Definitely, for sure.
Yeah.
So you talk about something else in your book, Stop Missing Your Life, which I think is really important, and it's the subject of trauma, and particularly
yeah.
childhood trauma.
Mm.
I think when people hear trauma, childhood trauma, they think of something particularly traumatic, like an abuse or absent parent or something like that. Yeah. That's not always the case.
Right.
So, I mean, talk about like, what that trauma actually could be for someone and what that kind of that impact that that could have on someone's life.
Yeah. So chapter one is titled Being Human is Hard. Not the sexiest opening to a book.
Certainly true.
I wanted to... Well, I mean, and when you think about the first noble truth of Buddhism, it's life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some parallel there. But I wanted to just acknowledge, like, from the beginning that really embodying presence, like really being able to show up fully for all the different dimensions of ourselves and inhabit a moment fully of our lives is not easy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's deeply vulnerable to actually, like, show up. We have all of these defenses, all of these guardings that keep us from feeling certain parts of ourselves, from connecting to certain people, from letting the world in, to just like experiencing the fullness of the moment, bad or good. A lot of us have complicated relationships to pleasure and not like allowing ourselves to feel pleasure, feel joy, or feel gratitude for a host of reasons. So I really wanted... to make sure the reader knew that up front. And because it helps set the stage for giving ourselves more permission to be human if it doesn't feel as easy as, oh, now I'm just going to be present. And then we're like, whoa, this is actually much harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And to build out that argument, I talk about the various traumas of life that accumulate over a lifetime. This was the hardest chapter to write because... trauma is a very loaded word, and I wanted it to be accessible for everyone. So, and there are many people that haven't been through very significant traumas, but everyone's experienced some degree of trauma when we consider trauma to be just anything that causes us to fragment a bit or feel a little less safe to be ourselves or a little less whole. So I talk about that on a micro to macro level and in two particular categories, shock trauma and developmental trauma. Shock trauma are those things that like happen usually individual events or like days, like it's a lot too much too soon too fast,
right?
Not enough time to process what happened, and it creates this stored kind of energy in the nervous system that doesn't get time to release, integrate, and move back into the flow of the just the energy of our nervous system. We sort of get stuck. And when it gets stuck, then we have to numb, or something beneath the surface feels like not quite right. And it keeps us just in a state where we're not fully connected, because we have this sense that if I were to really just like let down my guard or be fully present here, I might have to meet some of this stuff that I didn't meet before, and that scares me. Usually that's happening on a subconscious level. So shock trauma tends to have that. The extreme versions of it are like PTSD. But there's another form of trauma, which is developmental trauma, and this is more what you're talking about. This happens from very early ages. Some would argue it can happen even in the womb or before the womb if we get into like generational trauma or past lives. But we won't go into that here. I'll go into that in the book.
We'll go that
far beyond
out.
My pay grade. But if we just think about it from birth, especially into our most early years, we come into the world with basic needs, needs of love, attunement, and connection. And there are a lot of reasons we might not get that based on the situations, the context where we're in, the caregivers that we have. And we learn, right? Let's say if we just come into the world with this very open heart, and the people that were supposed to love us the most are supposed to give us that love, don't give us that love. We learn that when I'm open, I don't get that openness met. And it's actually quite painful when we don't get those needs met. So... at that age, right, we're very self-centered at that age. We don't have the ability to recognize, oh, well, this is because my parents had a difficult relationship with their parents and they didn't get love, so they don't know how to give it to me. And it's okay. The other people that I'll meet in my life, they'll be able to give me this, and that's fine. We can't do that.
Right.
We take it as there's something wrong with me. And so to protect ourselves, we more or less just like shut down our hearts, because it's just way too painful to put our heart out there and to have it not be met or reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of little things like that happen over the course of childhood and over the course of a lifetime that develop these internal walls that make it very difficult to be our full selves in the world, to soften our... And by the way, like the way I define presence is softening those walls of guarding that keep us from experiencing our wholeness, our fundamental wholeness.
Yeah.
So a big part of it is like being able to soften those walls. Mm-hmm. And so the developmental trauma over the course of a lifetime just puts up these walls and that come up subconsciously for us. We might not realize that we just go, you know, I'm not someone that connects with someone.
Right.
Or I have trouble in relationship, like getting close to people. But a lot of it's coming at a subconscious level.
Right.
So the first big step of it is just like having honest conversations with ourselves that might be happening, and to get a sense of like, what does that feel like? What do these walls feel like? And where are they in the body, and what do they prevent me from doing? Like, do I get to a point in a relationship where I start to get close to someone, but then I feel like these concrete slabs around my heart, and part of me goes no, and then I start sabotaging the relationship.
Right, right.
I go, oh, this person's not for me, or this person's too boring, or this person can't give me all the excuses that the mind makes. Being able to notice that. And just be able to take like a few breaths in that space so that we're not completely caught in the conditioning. And I'm not going to say that a few breaths are the thing that can fully heal like these deeper developmental traumas. A therapist can really come in handy in these situations. But I talk a lot about in the book, what are the building blocks that allow a person to meet those dimensions of themselves without immediately reinforcing the patterns of conditioning.
Yeah.
Because so much of it gets healed through presence itself, being able to meet it, allow yourself to feel some of that, the fear and the hurt of like, oh, my heart wants to emerge, but I'm terrified of what happens if it does.
Mm-hmm.
Like to get back to a place where we can do that freely and openly comes from being able to first feel that fear, let it start to pass, and then get back into that healthy relationship with ourselves and, and other people.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is people don't realize that they have these traumas and they're making decisions at 35 because of something that happened when they were 7 years old or something like that. You know, and even if it wasn't a massive trauma, it could be like, you know, you were 10 and like you got rejected by a girl at the school dance or something, you know.
Yeah.
That seems as an adult through the adult lens that that's not a big trauma. But as a 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, that's massive.
Yes.
And so you could be making decisions in your adulthood that are based on that traumatic event.
Totally. Yeah. And even things like, I mean, just for men specifically, this tends to be common. Like you break up with your girlfriend in seventh grade and you come home and you're sad and you're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And then your father says something like, buck up and be a man.
Right, right? Exactly. Yeah.
And you just learn that vulnerability is not safe.
Right.
And then you end up being like a leader of an organization, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to grow in your position, and that requires getting feedback of like how you're doing. But getting feedback is intensely vulnerable to hear things that you might not be doing well.
Sure.
That sense of vulnerability is like similar to what happened in seventh grade, and we just learn to never go near vulnerability again. So we end up just not taking in feedback, and we just operate from our own perspective of like what's safe and what we know to be okay. And it just limits us in how we can grow. Like all of these little developmental things that we might not necessarily say, like my dad saying that was a trauma. And I won't say that it was this big trauma. But they're little things that prevent us or that get in the way of us feeling safe to experience the fullness of our humanness.
Sure.
And that's the way I define trauma in the book.
That makes a lot of sense.
And in that context, everyone can identify.
I think everyone's walking around with some form of trauma, especially when you're taught to paper over that, you know, not feel your emotions and like you said, buck up. It's like, you know, no, we're supposed to feel these emotions.
Yes.
They're supposed to be, you know.
And a lot of people use meditation to bypass that work. I mean, that's where spiritual bypassing comes in.
Sure,
They use it to not have to feel that deeper stuff, to just focus, to feel the positive things. I mean, like, I tell you so many stories of people I've met in like when I lived in a monastery, that I could just see, like, whoa, this person came here to avoid something rather right. than to meet the fullness of themselves.
Wow.
And that's a very common thing we're seeing in the meditation mindfulness space right mm-hmm. now as it grows. Instead of these practices being used to hold the depth of ourselves with, like, compassion and mm-hmm. presence so that their healing can happen, it's used so that we can shift our attention away from those things and mm-hmm. just focus on the breath.
Yeah.
Focus on the breath. Be present, be present, be present.
Right.
But it's be present at the expense of all these things that we're running from. Mm-hmm. And not to say that that's not an important skill to have, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to be walking around with, like, an open wound while we're at work.
Sure.
And crying. And so there's importance to be able to, like, compartmentalize. But if we build our well-being around that, then it requires numbing ourselves.
Yeah.
And you can only experience so much of your fullness and your life in that way.
Can meditation be used as a tool to address those yeah. traumas and actually explore those and bring them to the surface so
yeah.
they can be kind of cleared?
Absolutely. And especially with the developmental stuff, like when you start getting into attachment theory and all the different ways our attachment can be compromised with our caregivers, a really cool thing about meditation is you actually get to redevelop a secure attachment with yourself in
mm-hmm.
the practice. If you never got it from someone else,
hmm.
like, that relationship starts to develop with you, where you feel safe within yourself.
Right.
So a lot can get healed through meditation practice. And it also just, like, requires bringing that presence into relationship with other people.
Yeah.
And I talk about in the book a practice called circling that actually is, like, meditation in connection with other people that I've been really interested in, that I think fills a gap with some of the more individual contemplative practices
mm-hmm.
that are really important in their own right for relationships.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you could practice for a relationship without being in that
relationship. Yeah.
and so I a blend of those is really important to me.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is great. So your book is available now.
Yes. Book is available now. Stop Messing Your Life, How to Be Deeply Present in an Unpresent World. If people want free resources like guided meditations, app recommendations, sleep meditations, anyone could just text their email address to this number. The number is +1 if you're out of the country, and then 631-405-4631. 631-405-4631. You just text your email address to that, and you'll get an automated email with a bunch of different recommendations. It'll have a link to the book as well, and also my podcast, which is called Practicing Human. Daily
awesome.
Podcast to support your journey as well, and that's totally free.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then where's the best place for them to get your book?
You can find it anywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, stopmessingyourlife.com, just written out.
Okay.
That you could find all the learn more about the book and all
okay.
the pre-order or the order links. Yeah, no longer
no
pre-order.
Not a pre-order anymore as of today.
Yeah.
That's very
so
cool.
many months of saying pre-order.
That's so crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else can they find on when they go to stopmissingyourlife.com?
You'll find some details about the book,
mm-hmm.
some things that are included in it,
okay.
Some bonuses that are offered with it as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, it'll all be there.
Very cool. And the podcast, again, is Practicing Human.
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Corey.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Corey.
I value our friendship, and thanks
Likewise.
For having me.
Of course.
As the first guest
on
the podcast.
Yes.
So awesome. Can't
Very
wait
cool.
to see what it becomes.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.